Welcome to Popcorn Psychology, the podcast where we watch blockbuster movies and psychoanalyze them. My name is Brittany Brownfield, and I am a child therapist, and I'm joined by...
Ben Stover, individual therapist.
Hannah Espinoza-Rimas, marriage and family therapist.
We are all licensed clinical professional counselors, also known as therapists, who practice out of the Ardent Counseling Center in Chicago. Even though we are licensed mental health professionals, this podcast is purely for entertainment purposes and to fulfill our love of dissecting pop culture in all forms. And today, we're going to be talking about Fatal Attraction. I think everyone's pretty familiar with that movie, at least, like, in the pop culture ether. I had never seen it before.
Me either.
I have definitely seen it. I actually watched this one for a grad school class.
Ooh. I mean, it definitely, I felt like I had seen it, and I definitely could quote it, even though I had never seen it. So I feel like most people are familiar with it. It's Glenn Close, Michael Douglas. They have an affair. Michael Douglas is married, and he has, like, what he assumed was a one-night stand.
Yeah. Incorrectly.
And she loses it. And kind of starts going after his family.
Stalking.
Harassing on his car. His
manipulating.
And it ends with her being shot and killed by his wife. So that's kind of the movie in a nutshell. So today we're kind of going to break down both the main characters, Alex, which is Glenn Close's character, and we're going to kind of touch upon borderline personality disorder. And then we're going to talk about Dan, which is Michael Douglas's character, and kind of touch upon narcissism and narcissism personality disorder and how his character displays some of the tendencies, but not necessarily the full-blown diagnosis. And then we're going to get into treatment about, well, both these characters, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Right, so when we start talking about Alex... When we say that she displays traits of borderline personality disorder, we realize that not everybody knows what that means. So when you're talking about borderline personality disorder, some of the key traits of that are instability in emotions and interpersonal relationships, an inadequate self-image, fear of abandonment, and marked impulsiveness and inappropriate anger.
I would say what blows my mind about this movie is that even though she is, I think we say this disclaimer a lot when we talk about this, is it's a movie, it's cinematic, yep. She's kind of a cartoon version of mental health. Mm-hmm. But I was looking at the trivia on IMDb, and Glenn Close stated that she had met with two psychiatrists before filming this movie, and both of them said that her character was not mentally ill, did not have any mental health diagnosis. And so she played her as if she wasn't necessarily mentally ill. And Glenn Close has now gone on to say that if she were to play this role now, she would definitely approach it differently because she's clearly someone who is struggling with mental illness.
Oh, absolutely.
Because yeah. I think what blows my mind about the psychiatrist saying that, and we don't know what she portrayed to them or if they read the script or whatever.
Right.
But she, like, if you go down the rundown of the criteria in the diagnostic manual about borderline personality, she fits everyone to a T. It's absolutely. It's like they specifically wrote someone who had the most cartoonish, over-the-top version of borderline personality disorder.
Yeah.
Like, the first one is, like, a real or imagined abandonment. I mean, she has, like, is it one night or a two-night stand with him? I think they slept together. Two nights. And she, like, is like, I can't believe you're not staying. Where are you going? Oh, I guess you just think I'm a whore. Like, it goes very quickly from they're just, like, kicking it the morning after.
Right.
To her, like, wigging out on him.
Right. What I thought was really interesting about it and can be true of borderline is that her real disturbing behavior didn't start till he triggered her trauma.
Oh, the abandonment stuff? Like him leaving in the morning?
No, when he faked the heart attack.
Ooh.
That's the first time you saw facially where Glenn Close's face twisted up and got into that real, like, angry space was when mm-hmm. he faked the heart attack. And then she made him think that she was lying about her dad having a heart attack when she was 7 mm-hmm. in front of her. Which turned out to be true.
I didn't think about that, because it definitely was a moment, because they're playing in the park.
That whole scene is just off.
Oh, way
like,
off.
It's just, like, a little bit, like, they're too much in physical contact. They're too familiar. Out in public, which with a two-night stand living in your neighborhood, because he's somewhere with his dog, which is a place he probably goes on a regular basis. Like, all of the parts of that scene were just off.
Oh, yeah, and then, like, running and tackling. Like, if like some random person tackled me in front of my dog, she would probably have a problem with that.
Oh, that's true. But I definitely think that's a good insight on your part about the heart attack thing, because I didn't think about that at all. So maybe it started getting, like, her, like, started getting her, like, instincts up about, like, oh, like my dad, and then what if he did die? And then she's starting to think about, like, what if I did lose this man? And then when he starts to leave the next morning, she's like,
can't bear it.
What are you doing?
Well, he did leave the first night. He just up and left. They show him leaving, like, probably 5 a.m.
His phone number.
And calls him.
And then they have dinner, right?
At his house.
And then they have dinner.
Yeah.
She makes him din-din.
After he cancels, you know, on the trip he was supposed to go on with his wife to look at their future home.
Yeah.
Which we can talk about later.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dan's
so the
next.
Second thing is a pattern of unstable and intense interpersonal relationships, which is the clear... Well, here's the thing. We don't really know what she was like before Dan. You know?
We do not.
Because I think that's one of the things when I was thinking on this movie and really, like, thinking about as a therapist and her in particular was she's only really defined in this movie through her relationship to Dan, the Michael Douglas character. Like, we don't really know her stuff with her dad, like, really, besides the fact that he died of a heart attack when she was little. And we don't know what her mom was like. We don't know if she has friends. We don't know anything about her outside of her reacting to him. And, I mean, right. We know that she just started this job, which could mean anything. It doesn't mean that she necessarily, like, blew up her last job.
Right, and that she lives in what seems to be an industrial, young person, kind of janky neighborhood of the city.
I feel like I never know how to judge that in 80s movies of
Same.
New York, because it's
Same.
All very, like, sexy to, like, live in, like, the meatpacking district or whatever the hell.
Right.
Like, everyone's, like, riding, this is a real tangent, but everyone's, like, riding in those weird, crazy, like, elevators where you have to pull down the doors.
Yep.
Right.
And, like, it's almost like a freight
There's
elevator.
There's always graffiti on the outside, but then the inside of the apartment is always really nice.
But everyone's,
and, like,
rich.
Odd, and everybody has money. It's very confusing.
It's very much like the Hollywood version of New York.
Yeah.
Which is...
At that time period.
Well, right. And, like, in the reality of New York is if you have the kind of money she's making as some kind of associate, new starting person, to have an apartment that big is bullshit.
Yeah.
But I would, But I would say,
for sure.
I guess the leap we could take is that her relationship with Dan is so, like, unstable and intense right off the bat that there's, feel like it can't possibly be that this is the first time she's ever behaved this way with someone.
I can't imagine.
Because he doesn't necessarily do anything intensely misleading that would make her think, like, this is different. And she does say, I always am attracted to married men.
They have a whole discussion about, and he calls her out about dating, about why would you be interested in married men? And it's because, do you like that you can't have us all the way? Mm-hmm. Or, like, and all of these other, like he said,
they
definitely is a movie where they have the conversations that you hope that they have in movies, but then they go just as badly, even though they're asking the right questions. Like, it just goes totally down the shitter. Like, it just doesn't work out
very
well.
Also because you're assuming that these conversations are being had by two people who are, like, healthy and appropriate.
Yeah.
And being rational, right? Like, going, because like, we're making a rationally decided upon poor decision.
Poor decision.
Because everything they say together, like, the two times they have dinner in the movie, the one time in the restaurant when they barely know each other.
Right.
And then the one time in her apartment, they're both asking very provocative questions of each other.
Yes.
You know, she's being very sexually provocative immediately, which is a sign of someone who her pattern is unstable and intense.
Yeah.
Correct.
She brings up only being attracted to married men. And so you can assume she's trying to get a rise out of him probably in some capacity. Like, either
trying to suss out if he's attracted to her.
Yeah.
Or if it is just him being
different. Mm-hmm. Or he's like, I'm not like all the other married men you've been messing around with.
Ugh.
I mean.
Right. Are you discreet?
Yeah.
Like, every time that makes
that
my
down.
Skin crawl.
I wrote,
when
she wrote, are you discreet? I was like, but you know what?
I'm very
We're not at Dan yet. We're not talking about Michael Douglas yet.
Okay.
But he gobbles it up.
Yeah, he sure does.
Like, also what is hard about this movie is that. Well, for me as a woman to be on the side of the narrative of this movie, which is, I assume, I feel like the pop culture identity of this movie is that there's this crazy bitch that he sleeps with and she goes fucking bonkers, kills their bunny, the mom and the wife shoots him. Hooray, hooray. Happy ending.
Right, which is...
That she got hers.
Right.
But I think watching it now is a... I wonder what it would be like if I'd watched this movie when I was a lot younger and not a therapist. Because she's clearly very ill.
Clearly ill.
So it's easy for me to have empathy for her. Because everything she's doing, even though it's like sexy or exciting, like I'm like, oh no. Oh no. Like when she's like, are you discreet? I was like, it's like I could feel, because I knew it was going to happen and I knew why she was asking it. And it just, I just know that if someone asked me those questions in that setting, like I would be like, it's like the reddest of flags. Like everything in this movie is a red flag. Everything she says and does, everything he says and does. For the lot of the movie, is red flags, red flags, red flags.
Oh, huge red flags. I mean, they hit you with her bonkersness really quick, but what drives me crazy about, like, the way he didn't recognize the danger with her and, like, start recognizing is, like, when her anger levels flashed like that and so quickly. Like, her, and that's, I've worked with people that have borderline before. And have seen that, and that she displayed it spot on to what it actually looks like. Like, for sure, she was very good at that. Like, that anger flash happens like that, and it's inappropriate. And
which
it's
is why
now
I can't believe she didn't keep that in mind when she did this movie, and because I feel like she's such a good, like, not good, like an accurate presentation, but it's not wrong either. Like, I definitely could feel where the movie was going, how she was going to react. Like, I was, like, guessing how she was going to react before she did it.
Yeah. I mean, I think we were both kind of, while we were watching it, realizing that she, because they have a character who displays all of these characteristics so well, that it was easy in some ways to find the patterns of what she was going to do to destroy herself.
Yeah.
Or how it was going to continue to become more chaotic. Like, so because she's going to try and hurt herself, and then she's going to say that she's pregnant. And, like, and there's all these parts that you could just foresee coming. Because now, once she is triggered, right, to feel like he is going to leave, she's going to do everything that she can to protect herself or to keep him and to hold on to him and to make him believe that she should be with him.
Right. And I think with this, like, where I want to state about the accuracy of this movie is it's a little split. Like, her interpersonal interactions, like the actual, like, acting with Michael Douglas and even, like, going to see the wife and, like, doing those kinds of manipulative things.
Yeah.
All those are pretty accurate to what borderline might look like.
Yeah.
The stalking.
The violence.
The violence, all of that. Can that happen? Yes. Is it likely to happen in an extreme manipulative, stalking, scary, murdery type of way that she displayed it in? Where she's causing, like, where the fuck do you get acid, number one, to, like, to throw on someone's car and, like killing the rabbit and boiling it in the pot and, like, all of this kind of...
Kidnapping the kid.
Bonker stuff. Kidnapping the kid. Like, all those kinds of things, those aren't really that realistic. But
no.
Her depiction of, like, what a person might act and feel like and what they might say, those were pretty accurate.
I think all the parts of where she was, it was just had to do with herself.
Right.
Right? Like, not the parts where she's
the
getting self-destructiveness
the self was very the self-destructive accurate. Part. Well, felt very accurate. Because that's what I was just thinking. Because all the violence becomes more outward. And my assumption would be, and this is an assumption, is that if I was seeing someone acting this way, the escalation of behavior would be a lot towards him, probably more in, like, stalker, more in, like, incessant phone calls and that kind of behavior. Yeah. But I feel like it would probably continue to be more self-destructive, like multiple suicide attempts.
Correct.
Things like that, until she accidentally really killed herself or injured herself to the point that she got hospitalized. And then you might hit a point where things start to improve for her. Or she stabilizes
Well, because then her focus has changed. Her focus would be changed in that scenario, right? Because then now she would have to be focused on what's happening at the hospital and who she's connected to at the hospital and how all those things are going versus having all of her energy be put into this kind of relationship that now she has a huge fear of losing.
Because I think why we're trepidatious about how impressed we are with the accuracy of her portrayal is because we don't think it would get to this level. Like, this is where it gets to become like a Lifetime movie. Where she becomes so outrageous and kidnapping and killing and stalking. And like, that is the part where it's like, well, now we're vilifying mental illness. But all this stuff, all this stuff up to that, like how she relates to Dan, is something that I could see happening and feels accurate.
It's things that I've seen. Like, we had...
Yeah.
Like, I've...
And how clients have behaved towards us with borderline.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we become an intimate relationship with them to a certain extent. I mean, professional... but we become a part of their life, and we become a person in their life who they care about our opinion. It feels very personal because we're talking about personal stuff. And so some of this stuff, like the mood swings, the calling us out, the trying to start fights with us, being provocative, like that's all stuff that can happen in session. And it has happened in session with me.
Yeah.
And I'm sure with you as well, with clients I've worked with who have borderline tendencies. Absolutely. Or the diagnosis itself.
Well, once you become somebody that they can be afraid of losing.
Yeah. Because it's all rooted in, like, which they actually do portray well here. It's all rooted in a sense of abandonment.
Correct.
And doing everything in your power to not be abandoned.
Right. Right. Which, you know, the onset of that was also displayed well in this country, because she, you know, she points out she loses her dad at age 7 in front of her.
Like, yeah.
That's a kind of thing that you may see at the beginning of this type of disorder, is that, like, intense fear of abandonment, particularly when you're a 7-year-old child barely able to even comprehend
what the finality of death in and of itself, and then to have it happen in front of you, and have it happen to somebody who's a primary caregiver on top of everything else, and God only knows what the fallout of that is as a family as well. Like, how does that, what happens to her mother? Like, is that maybe when her mother starts having an onset of something because of what happened? Like, how does the family, when somebody dies like that in that way, how does the family change to manage that?
Right.
I mean, I really wish we knew more about... That would have made it a richer movie if, like, and I could see this happening in another kind of movie like this, where he does a deep dive into personal life and all these things come out and you're like, oh my gosh, like learning more about, like a montage of him learning about her via like newspaper microfiche and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean,
or like
an
Googling
80s movie.
On the internet.
Where's the montage?
Where's the montage? No, where's the microfiche? I want to see at least one person going into a library and cranking through the microfiche and being like, oh my, and then they do like the slam when they go through the different headlines.
Yeah. Right,
like,
right.
Yeah. That is what this
like
movie was.
Such a specific. Such a specific.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do, though. I do totally.
And you're like, dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. Totally.
But, because it's like, exactly what you were saying, Hannah. Like, I wonder what, if her dad was her only, if her dad had been her only caregiver,
like,
and then she went to foster care after that, that would make so much sense. Because then it's like she lost not just her main support, but a male. And then it totally uprooted her life, and she had no attachments after that. And then da 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 da. Like, that would make 100% sense.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the one thing. So then there's the, with borderline, there's the lack of sense of self or identity or unstable sense.
Right.
Which, I mean, she's definitely very comfortable in her sexual, and that she's a sexual being.
Oh, absolutely.
Or that she's sexually attractive. But I feel like. And she also has a decent job. That is kind of unrealistic. That she seems like she has a really good job in his book firm. Well, he's the lawyer for a book firm,
he's
right?
He's the lawyer for a book firm. That doesn't make
and
any sense.
And she's, like, working in the editing of it?
Something. I don't
like
know.
Like a publishing house?
Right.
Literary? Yeah. That's something I feel like a lot of people in the 80s movies had, like, a job in the literary field. And it's like, what does that mean? Like, you're an agent. You work at a firm. Work with books. Literary.
You know,
hashtag literary.
That's probably why Anastasia Steele was in that field, because
they were like, we know where the 80s was sexy in the 80s.
Right.
Yeah, we do.
Right.
But I feel like she doesn't have an identity outside of being sexual, I would guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would imagine that she's a way she is created to assign value and meaning to herself, also where she can use to, or to create some kind of identity that allows her to be something that other people need and can't be without, so that they won't abandon her.
Well, it's an easy way to get attention.
Right.
And it's also a way to get a caregiver.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, and it's something that
it's an easy in
because, like, you can, it's a lot harder to get someone to fall in love with you than it is to convince someone to have sex with you, you know what I mean? And so for her to be so sex focused, like, I can get guys to be attracted to me, you know, I can dress a certain way, I can talk a certain way, and that's also instant gratification.
Well, and the way she had sex, like, I mean, even my notes, like, My notes for this movie were not stellar, and I, like, wrote, like, worst sex scene ever.
It was so aggressive.
It was so...
And frantic.
It was aggressive, it was frantic, It was intense. It was almost like she was trying to embody what she might think someone might want as part of like a fantasy.
Like, I'm going to turn the sink on and get us all wet.
Right. Yeah. Right. That was...
Well, and having sex in the elevator, so in a public space, giving him a blowjob in a public space.
Right. While someone's like walking by in like an open elevator, like clearly demonstrating risky behavior. But the intensity weirded me out. Like that, it like just watching that was going like I don't know, like that.
It definitely is like a lot coming at you. It's like a lot. She's at a 10.
She's the first time out. She's like jumping on him.
But also they had sex. Right, whoa. What felt like I wrote, they are having sex immediately. That's what my note said. I was like, they are. It's like there was no.
There's no pause. There was no like, hey, maybe we're gonna make out, or like maybe like steal a kiss, like after dinner. It was like, all right, we're gonna fuck, and then they just do it. Like, it's just like they don't like. There's no. They're just like, okay, we're gonna. I
was. I feel like if you looked at my face, I was probably like bugged out. Like my eyes were like, oh, okay, like they are getting, because it's like they go straight from that very inappropriate dinner.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, hugely right inappropriate.
To aggressive sex. Like, immediately.
Really aggressive. Really aggressive. Like, like creepily aggressive. Like I know we were talking about this like beforehand. I know Ben has so never weird.
Been so turned off by a sex scene in his life.
What turned me off, like, maybe it's just that I just had a child and, like, I went to all these nursing classes with my wife and, like, I see this, but, like, the way she, like, pulled his head onto her nipple was like you wait for a baby to open its mouth and you gotta, like, shove him on there. It's not like this, like, gentle thing.
Create...
Like,
it's an intimacy weird. A bond. Via their sexuality.
A bond.
Right. Because she's probably got sexuality and intimacy, like, all well, she up. Has the whole thing where the day that he tries to leave, like, the second day they've been together and he tries to leave, she's like, you think you can just do whatever you want with me, and, like, you're just gonna leave, like, who am I to you, just using me for sex? And his face, which is, I was on his side at this scene, because I was like, he was like, yeah.
No, right. because talked about this.
Well, because they don't know each other.
It's not that they talked about it.
Well, because here's the, any other situation, the girl might be a little, like, feel a little hurt, maybe a little used, maybe a little like, that guy sucks. But it was very clear that they weren't, like, he wasn't trying to date her, and he wasn't acting like he was trying to date her. And though he is a sleazeball, her energy was like he had... talked about them. It was like he had like talked he about had getting promised married and having kids.
That he had
his
promised
wife.
Something that yeah. none of us actually heard him say. But by sleeping with her, it's to like, her he
well
had.
The quote from Vanilla. Well, I always think of there's a quote in Vanilla Sky with Cameron Diaz who acts kind of like this.
Yeah,
Tom Cruise, and like he tries to leave after they've just been fooling around, and she's like, "Sex is a promise you make with your body." And I remember even at like 15 when I watched that, being like, "Oh, girl." But I think that's what this when you don't really get. Interpersonal relationships and you're trying to find signs of intimacy, those signals get blocked. They get, I mean, like, I'm not even on this level of like borderline or mentally ill, but like think about teenage girls and how they will be sexual with a guy to try to get them to like them and to like think that if like how many times have we heard the trope of like I'm gonna show you how much I love you by having sex with you, baby, and then the and it doesn't happen, like after they have sex it like falls leaves. Apart. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a lot of wired cross in terms of thinking it's very easy to confuse sexuality and sexual intimacy with true intimacy and love.
Right. Well, where I have a slightly different opinion here is that you're right about the first date. But on the second date.
Oh, when they have the dinner?
When they have the dinner, like he creates this like.
He does show that story about Madame Butterfly.
He shares the story about Madame Butterfly. He takes her out where they go to the dog park. Like, they flirt openly in public. They act
he
like
calls her honey. Public. I wrote that down.
He does. And, like, what bothered me about that is, like, he's, like, sharing, like, he was creating intimacy with her. He was creating, like, this familiar...
So he could get what he wanted.
I mean, he's a douche. I won't contend that. Like, he's a douche. Like, absolutely, like a narcissist, personality disorder, probably not, but, like...
He's just narcissistic.
He's narcissistic, for sure, but we'll get to him in a minute or two here. Oh, but we'll get to him. We'll get to him. I feel attacked.
But I do think she definitely, regardless of how he treated her, she took it to another level. And I think that's what happens when you get that intimate with someone sexually or just emotionally that you don't know very well.
Right.
Because, like, granted, she took it to the highest level there can be, but he also did not, he just wasn't caring about what he was getting into. He was being mindless with his behavior.
Oh, yeah, no, he didn't care. So he
tripped and fell into the situation, and then it swallowed him whole.
Yep. Almost. Oh, yeah, he tripped and fell.
But you know what I mean? Like, he just thought he was just doing something fun and frivolous, and it was like, no.
No, and then it became contrived, and then he became, like, calculating and planned about it, and he, like, saw her again, he blew off plans with his wife. Like, there's a lot that we can talk about when we talk about him, but well, let's wrap up Alex first, right?
Because then there's impulsivity, it correct. Says, in at least two areas that are potentially self-damaging. So, I mean, they work together, sort of, indirectly. They both work for the same literary firm.
Well, right.
And so, one, the fact that, for both of them, that they get involved with someone, if you're going to have this kind of frivolous sexual relationship, you know, it's the whole, like, shitting where you eat kind of situation. Why do it with someone that you don't know very well at your work and you don't know how they're going to be after? So that's, for both of them, you know, very risky.
Yep.
And then her, like, he could easily just call her work and be like, she threw acid on my car. You know what I mean? And she'd get fired. Like, she is acting in a way that's going to, like, he never, I mean, the only reason why she didn't really get in trouble until the end when she was killed was that he was trying to cover up his business. Like, he could have easily called the cops on her. I think he did try at one point. But, like, by the time the acid thing's happening and all that stuff, like, she's not thinking about what this can look like to her and how it can affect her whole life. Right. She's just thinking about
She's just trying to manage her own internal thoughts and processes to manage whatever.
And then the recurrent suicidal behavior, which we clearly saw. She slit her wrists when he tried to leave.
Well, and then she made a scene of it too. Yeah. Like it was a superficial wound. It was for sure a superficial wound. It was enough to bleed, but then, like, she was standing there. Well, after they got into the big fight and, like, the big scene happened, and they're like, well, let's say goodbye to each other in a nice way. I forget what creepy way she said it, but, like, all the while, like,
she had her hands behind her back.
She had her, number one, he's a dumbass. Like, I worked security, you know, for concerts for 2 years, and I learned the number one thing, like, don't go anywhere fucking near anyone who has their hands where you can't see them, number one. But, like, she's, like, got her hands behind her back, and then she's, like, rubbing the blood on his face, and she's displaying clear manipulative behaviors here.
If you really hurt yourself, I don't want to give anybody ideas, but, like, if you really hurt yourself slitting your wrists, you faint, like, you are immobile. Like, even by the time you get to the second wrist, you're kind of out of it. Because you're bleeding so much and so quickly. That's why people usually do it in prone positions.
Yeah.
Not to give anybody any ideas. But I thought the same thing too. So the fact that she's standing and having a conversation and isn't woozy, doesn't seem like that woozy, means that it's not a pretty superficial wound. And in a direct way to get him to stay, which works. And so she gets what she wants.
Yeah, which, side note, if someone does that, call 911.
Always. Call 911.
They go to the hospital. It's not, let's give it attention. It's not, let's, like, cuddle them and give them what they need. What they need is to go to the hospital and to be shown immediately that this is the only response to this type of behavior ever.
So the next one, which is, I think, the biggest, affective instability. And what they mean by affective in the therapeutic world is emotional instability, is what we mean by affect. And I wrote that down multiple times. Like, she will go from screaming to crying sadness to I love you, too sexual. Like, even in that scene when he tries to leave, she's screaming at him, and then she's trying to have sex with him, and then she's crying, and then I think she says I love you, like, pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's like she completely cycles in like one 5 minute interaction.
Oh yeah, it's like in 1 minute she goes from,
yeah, because I think she was also hitting him maybe even at some point, like, so she's angry.
There was definitely,
and then she's upset, and then
there were definitely two situations in the movie that I marked down where she does that whole cycle where she's, like, aggressive.
When was the other time?
I can't remember, but it was a very similar circumstances where they're, like, in her apartment or something similar, and they're screaming at each other.
Yeah,
and she goes from, like, I love you. Maybe it's when she's pregnant and he comes in and chokes her.
Yeah, because I'm going to call your wife.
Because even, like, after he chokes her, I think she says, I love you.
Yeah.
Well, she tries to, like, put his hand in her shirt or like rip her shirt. She did something sexual. I forgot what it was, but she did something very sexual, like it's bizarre behavior. Like she displays bizarre behavior. When he tried to leave, like ripped his shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the chronic feelings of emptiness. I think that scene where she's sitting in the dark and flipping the lamp up and on, like on and off with her tears down her face.
Yes.
Like,
oh yeah.
That's a, obviously a scene of emptiness.
For sure. And did you guys notice that when she was like this, like free sexual being, like I'm going to be this partner for you, she was wearing white. And then when she started becoming more of the villain, like Vintage, she was like wearing like all white. And once it became clear that she was actually an ill person and the villain of this story, she was wearing all black.
It did seem like when she was doing something naughty, like throwing acid on his car, she was wearing that huge black leather jacket that had like shoulder pads for days. Oh, no. Like the most 80s 80s can be.
Yeah.
Like that gross leather that looks like wrinkled, but also like not shiny enough, but too shiny at the same time.
Right.
And also fake.
And and then she was like doing the very virginal, like she'd wear white a lot, which I'm sure the director probably had like a whole little thesis in his head about why she was wearing white.
She's
wearing white.
She wore white at the beginning, like the first time we see her, she's wearing white. And then
the party, when he first meets her at the mixer, the work party, the highly racist work party with all the Japanese people,
right?
Yeah. Who were very badly portrayed.
Yeah.
Problematic.
Yes.
I guess is the word.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was it was racist for sure.
Yeah.
But then, when she becomes like the villain of the story, you see like she's wearing black until the last scene. Then she's in white again.
Oh, interesting, interesting, interesting. Mm. And I'm sure also the white was to show like all the blood as well. Very dramatic, like visuals.
Oh, right, when she's self-injuring in front of the one like relieving the tension, probably like the picking at her skin with the knife.
Oh. And then there's inappropriate, intense anger or difficulty controlling her anger. Clearly, we've kind of touched upon that with the emotional instability. And then paranoid ideation or severe dissociative symptoms. So that's kind of wordy. Paranoid ideation is just kind of having paranoid thinking to the point that you're not really like there. Like is a dissociative part. Like I could wave my hands in front of your face and you're like not really seeing me. You're like in your full blown like head. Which I would say at the end, she did seem delusional at the end. Like in the end when she's attacking the wife, she does seem like she's in a full blown like fugue, maybe even a fugue state, like in a very like, what are you? I think she even says to somebody, like, "What are you doing here?
Why are you here?
Why are you here?"
Why are you, and it's like it was her house, like
she's very confused and upset, and like when the wife was trying to talk to her and she was cutting herself, like she didn't seem all there in the sense that it doesn't seem like she was fully
present,
in her thoughts. And so, I mean, that wasn't. I mean, so that is a symptom of borderline, but it is one of those things where it is like for the Lifetime movie aspect of this movie, how it's played up. Yeah. But it's probably more, it accurately portrayed, it would be more like everyone's trying to bring me down. Like you're just trying, like if you had a negative interaction with somebody, probably based on the way you behaved, it'd be very like, they hate me. They're always trying to make everyone think that I'm a slut. Like it'd be more the paranoid in terms of like everybody is.
Everybody's
trying
against
to sabotage
you.
Me.
Yeah,
right.
And like I don't trust any women because women are always trying to like bring me down, or you know, men are always, you know what I mean. It'd be more like, or if you had a, like I guess a more concrete example would be, let's say you're at work, and you say hi to Peggy at work. Peggy didn't hear you. She walked past. End of interaction. And then you spend all day thinking, Peggy's trying to get out to get me. Peggy hates me. You know, I bet you the reason why I didn't have that nice parking spot at work is because Peggy's in charge of parking. And then, like, you start to do. It's just that irrational not knowing where you stand with people and not being able to look at relationships rationally.
Right, like when you vilify people that are trying to help you.
Exactly. Well, yeah, exactly. Well, and I think the thing we talk about a lot in borderline personality when we talk about it in therapy circles is that there can be a common behavior of everyone's either an angel or a demon.
Correct. Yeah.
Either everyone or where, what she kind of does in this movie with Dan.
Right. She makes him an angel and she demonizes his wife.
Yeah. She's even when he chokes her, even when he screams at her, even when he's very clearly trying to put distance between them, she's like, but Dan, like, I love you, Dan, and we're meant to be together, and like we made this baby, and Like, she's very, like, keeping him in this realm of, like, but you're the best, and we're going to have this kid together, and I care about you, and, like, as if he can give her everything she needs if he just can get in the on board, and the wife is what's between them.
Mm-hmm. Right, right, which is definitely a delusional type of thing. And we also see her hit a little bit of a dissociative state, again, like, at that heart attack, like, when she, like, runs to him, it's almost like she's having a flashback.
Mm-hmm.
Because she, like, clearly interprets that in a whole different state than he. I mean, someone falling over is serious, but the likelihood that someone who's probably 40 having a heart attack like that is, it's not unheard of, it's not impossible, it is low.
But also, yeah. I would say, even if someone, like, fell on the floor like that at a public park, my first thought wouldn't be panic like that. Like, she very quickly is like, damn, what's going on? And I'd just be like, yo, Ben. Yeah. You're right, buddy? Like, I would be like, what is he doing? Like, I wouldn't be, like, full freaked out.
Which might show why she's, you know, show that she is being triggered in that moment, and that's why she goes from 0 to 100 and runs over there.
I just got an image in my head of, like, you two standing over me with, like, a stick. do you want to go poke a dead guy with a stick? Yeah!
I would just be like, Ben, don't play.
And I would, like, walk get away from up.
And then I
think my wife would do.
Yeah.
And I think one clear thing, too, which I noticed, which I think is part of, I don't know, you guys maybe could decipher this for me, but I don't know if this would be, like, more of, like, the paranoid thinking or the social skills stuff, but, like, she has total lack of ownership about her behavior. Like,
oh, absolutely.
There's a very clear argument at the end when she starts calling his house because he's not answering at work, and he goes to confront her. And she goes, well, what do you expect me to do? You weren't taking my calls at your work anymore. So I had to, you've reduced me. She says, you've reduced me to this. And it's all this, like, she has no responsibility for her behavior because he is making her up the ante. Like, you ignored me. So I had to go to your work.
I don't have another choice.
So I had to go to your house and hang out with your wife.
You changed your number. So now I had to act like I'm buying your house so that your wife will give me your new number. And now I'm going to follow you to your new house, which, oh, you're moving to the country, are you?
So it's this total lack
moving away.
Of, and it's a total lack of, she's creating a story in her head where nothing is her fault.
Yes.
Because he is pushing her movement forward, which enables her to do all this stuff because none of it's really her fault.
Right.
So he's making her do it. So it's okay that she kidnaps his kid and kills his rabbit and all that
because
stuff.
If he would just be with her, she wouldn't have to do any of those things.
Yeah.
If he would just make the right decision, she wouldn't have to do any of those things to get his attention.
Because taking ownership of that stuff would require her to really look at herself. Well, to have, one, the mental, to be healthy enough to look at herself, which I don't think she is.
No.
And have the stability and the support to deal with looking really hard at yourself and being like, oh, maybe it's my choices that are wrong.
Yeah.
Which I don't think she can see clearly. I mean, she's clearly in a state where she's not assessing reality
right
correctly.
No, I mean, she goes and picks up his child from school, which, like, what the fuck, school? Like, but, I mean, this movie is probably the reason schools started creating lists of who's acceptable to pick out the parent. Like,
Kindergarten Cop.
Yeah, right? Good old 80s and 90s movies helping us to understand why we should not be stupid.
Yeah.
Which, side note, we're not figuring out because, you know, putting guns on robots.
Yeah.
You know, that's, you know, Terminator didn't happen, guys. But anyway, the thing that, like, this displays this, like, just rational behavior and, like, not able to accept, like, consequences is, like, she is showing that she's willing to go and pick up the kid and try to start building a relationship with his daughter. Like, it's, like, a split move of, like, this is threatening behavior of look what I can do, but it's also, no, I'm going to meld into your life so that I can become, like, another parent to this child because I'm going to be part of this family now and we're going to be this new family and I'm going to be your other mommy and give me a kiss on the cheek. That part made my skin crawl.
Yeah, it made my stomach hurt.
Like,
yeah.
Because
I think it's just... Well, it's just a lack... Her perception of reality is not reality.
Well, and how much her inner workings can't stop her from doing things that are a physical action.
She's so impulsive.
Like, it's so hard to stop anything from happening. It's like the first thought that comes in just works because that will put her closer to Dan, and that's really all she's looking
for. I don't know if this is a purely hypothetical question. is, can you be both this impulsive and this methodical? Which might be where this movie kind of doesn't make sense to us.
Yes. Yeah.
Because she had to buy fucking acid from somewhere.
I think it's like that she's right.
Yeah, like how do you find acid? So she had to plant acid. She did all that. I mean, I guess you could argue that calling and trying to get his new phone number was impulsive and like the repetitiveness of it. But then like figuring out where his daughter lived and like, I mean, it's almost like mania, you know, which is a whole nother thing. But she's so methodical that it doesn't feel impulsive too. Like she's like, I don't know. It's, you could argue it.
You can. I think I would argue like that it's possible because I've seen stuff like it before. Like this is obviously like to the nth degree.
Right.
But I have seen calculated impulsive, almost evil things like that happen before.
Okay.
Like where the impulsivity of it is going with it and not reevaluating
really the next step.
Right.
I guess too, in picking up the kid, she's not thinking about, I could get charged with kidnapping, or what's going to be the legal fallout, or like what's the next steps of this. She's just in the moment.
Right. So it's like the lack of evaluation. Like, would you see that in Flight of Ideas of like mania type of thought? Absolutely. But with borderline things, I've seen things like this where, not to this degree again, but like where calculated kind of dysfunctional thought and action go together, but they come so fast and they just go like, yeah, like this guy could just do this, and then if I just do this, it'll just scare him enough that it'll stop doing that, and it'll know he'll have to be with me, or else I'll do this crazy shit. Like it can
kind of like not being able to see anything but your goal,
correct,
and not being able
and
to
really
see,
and being like, and then as soon as you have a thought, going with it, and not being like, well, would that work? It just would happen. So the idea that she is methodical in getting these things and having it be as thriller like scary seems unlikely, because she wouldn't be able to maintain that kind of method based on how she's already acting in the scenes with him or whatever.
And also the fact that she's still able to look pretty good. Like, I know by the end scene, she's like kind of a wreck.
Yeah.
But she's still like full hair, full makeup, killer 80s outfits.
Yeah.
Like, I'm assuming showing up to work. Also, how long, what's the time frame of this movie? Do you think it all takes place in 1 week? 2 weeks?
Ish.
3 weeks?
2 weeks?
Front to back?
2 weeks.
Probably
7 days.
Well, I think more.
Like a month?
I think maybe a month. It depends on how far along in the home buying process they are, because that shit takes a while. But like that.
Yeah, but in movies they always buy houses super fast.
Oh yeah, they're like, maybe he's just a big shot liar, and they're like, I got cash, so let's close this deal.
I'll just pay you, yes.
Yeah.
Maybe.
But also it seemed like they were very much like at the end process of buying a house. And he was like, I trust you, baby, when she, like, went out and looked at it.
Yeah, yeah.
He was like, you got it.
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't know. Like, either way, like, just the intensity of all this, this person's irrational reality is so scary.
Well, it's also the thing where
it's
she's...
so scary.
And also the thing where she's not... She can only see them being close and being in a relationship with him. She does not care about the state of that relationship, like whether he wants to actually be there, whether he's kind to her, whether it's reciprocal.
Well, because she's already made it up in her mind that that's the only end result, right? So if we're talking about how I was talking about the goal, like we see this goal and that's all we have to get to, and there's not having any insight about how you feel or how the other person feels even, and just kind of going with it in that way.
Because where I felt sad for her is like, he treats her horribly, and we'll get to that in a second, but like he is really ruthless with her in a number of ways, and it does not deter her at all.
No.
It seems to amp her up. And it makes me sad for her and people in her situation where they don't, because the crux of it is they don't feel like they deserve better than that.
Right.
Right. Or they convince themselves that if they just do enough, then he'll love her and
she would have proven
because
it.
She'll have proven it, right. And that's the one I see more often. Like, I say, if I just do this extreme enough thing, then he'll love me.
Then he'll finally understand how much I need him and how much he means
to me.
That'll
be the thing.
Right.
Like, getting pregnant. Like, I don't believe that she was pregnant.
I don't believe that she was pregnant
also
for a minute.
Also, because she says that, like, four days after they had sex. Also, okay, so now let's just get into Dan. We talked about Alex a lot. Let's get into Dan. I have feelings. So, Daniel.
Do we need to put like an alert on that, like a sound effect? Brittany like has feelings.
I'll say this up front.
Wah, wah.
What I did not like about the concept of this movie is that the way it's viewed in pop culture, the way that I viewed it until I watched it, is that she's this crazy psycho bitch that ruins this dude's life because she's crazy.
Right.
And when I watched it, how I really felt was, she is an ill person.
Yeah.
She is a very sad person with extreme mental illness.
Correct.
And he is just a dude acting like a prick.
He's an entitled asshole. I mean,
and so
absolutely.
As this movie was going on, even though I do not agree with what she was doing, and she was obviously needed help, and she definitely shouldn't have done the thing she did, I was more upset with him because he is, for all intents and purposes, a mentally stable person who keeps making really shitty decisions.
Based on what he wants.
Because in any other situation, there's like a thousand instances where she does something off the wall where anybody else would have called the cops, called a hospital, got her help. But because he was trying to cover his ass and thinking about himself and trying to make it the quietest situation he could, it just continued to escalate until she hurt herself and hurt other people.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to cover up his BS. It's like when you are playing with your siblings and they accidentally get really hurt.
Yeah.
And they start crying really hard. Yep. You're like, shut up. Because you don't
want it didn't hurt.
To
it doesn't hurt. Oh, I've said that before.
So.
You're fine.
No, it's fine.
Yeah. So we've talked a lot about what Alex's deal is. Or like how she perceives his relationship inappropriately and the inappropriate stuff she does. But what do we think about Dan and what he does that was red flags to us?
So what strikes me as the most like obvious thing about Dan is that he, from the minute you see his character, you show that he is disengaged from his family.
Yes.
Like
yes.
They're showing him with his headphones on and his daughter's watching her TV show, which side note, daughter? Question mark?
Well, her haircut was borderline child abuse. Not to make light of child abuse, but it was that classic 80s mullet rat tail, which is just, like, almost a masterpiece. It's so horrible.
So bad.
It's just but, yeah, bad. He's really, I mean, but I think it's that stereotypical, especially, like, in 80s movies, of, like, the dad works, and he's, like, trying to do his thing, and his family's just around.
Right.
And they're not apart, yeah, where they don't have a role or a presence, really.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like, they went out of their way to show you that, like, he's kind of, like, disconnected from his family, but then he's, like, puts on this, like, big social persona at work, and he's, like, this big shot.
Well, even at drinks with his wife, which I would assume would be one of the few social outings they get to go out to together, like that racially problematic party that they went to.
Yeah.
Where it probably is one of the... they have a six-year-old daughter, so they probably don't get to go out together a lot, the two of them.
No,
and
probably not.
Does he do? He wanders off, meets Glenn Close, starts chatting her up until his wife unfortunately appears, and he looks kind of, like, begrudgingly at her.
Right, which... even more of, like, an asshole move, like, even though his friend likely had 0% chance of ever landing her, like, his buddy with, like, the horrible 80s glasses was, like, trying to flirt with her unsuccessfully, but then he is the one that sleeps with her, like, that's a bro code violation, like, straight up violation. Like...
really glad
I don't think this guy follows any codes, bro or otherwise.
Well, that's what I mean.
I think it's
a social contract, right? Like if your friend, like, number one, you're married, so let's start there.
Yeah.
Like you're married and that's an asshole move. So like let's not excuse that or make it seem like it's cool because you're out. Like it's not.
Right.
Don't get me wrong there. Like this guy's an asshole, but his friend had like indicated that he was interested in this woman. She shot him down.
Hard.
We'll talk like Hannah for a while. Hard.
I do say things weird sometimes.
But his buddy has expressed his interest, and he's like, yeah, but I'm
in
a banger, so that's cool, right?
He definitely seems, Michael Douglas's character, Dan, definitely, I'm not going to say that a lot, he definitely seems like he gets a big thrill out of attention.
Yeah.
Like, he liked flirting with her at the bar, and then when they meet at work at a business meeting, they're like giving hard eyes at each other. And I was like, I literally wrote that down.
I literally wrote down, giving eyes to each other at the meeting.
And you're married.
Yeah. And then they go,
and his friend saw that. His friend was looking at him like, what the fuck?
Everybody was fucking looking at him. Because they're like, can you guys keep your dicks in your pants, please?
Like, they showed the secretary later in the movie, like when he was meeting with her in her office, they made a point to show the one woman standing there, like, with this, like, judgy, confused look, like, what are you doing? Who is that? Like, it was the quintessential, who's that bitch?
And he made no attempts when he meets up with Alex and they go to dinner, which is fine. Like, people of two different genders should be able to go to a dinner together. And I'm not like Mike Pence. Like, I don't think that, like, men and women can't eat meals together and keep it cool. Ugh. But as soon as she takes it to the level of provocation, he meets her where she's at and then, like, ups the ante. Like, he really likes being wanted by her, and he, like, gloms on that attention.
Right.
And he says something which I wrote down, where he goes, I have a lot of pool around here at his job. So it's very, like, he wants to present, like, a big dick daddy to her.
Yeah,
and he
likes being
cool in that way. Like, he definitely has this bravado-ness about him, for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, he just wants to, like, have the status.
And he's just not... The fact that he is never dissuaded by her boundary pushing. And he seems to eat it up.
Yeah, I mean, I think that he... Honestly, I don't know that he thinks a lot past exactly what's going on in the moment. Like, he seems like the kind of person who just goes, does whatever he wants, and has no way to look at how it will affect other people. I mean, even the fact that he, you know, got dressed to go to that thing with his wife and then disappeared from her and went to do his own thing. And, I mean, he just doesn't... I don't know that he can see outside of himself. Right. It's like a very selfish...
And she's looking for him at that party, too. His wife's, like, looking for him.
Right? Yeah. And she got dressed up...
For him.
For him. And she looked hot.
Yeah. And I think the biggest thing, which we talked about a little bit off mic before we started, and my biggest, which I kept probably shouting while I was watching the movie with Hannah, was...
She shouted a lot.
Was he has no resistance, no moral qualms, no guilt, no trepidation about jumping straight into a sexual relationship with this woman. Like, they go straight from dinner. It's like, because I don't know how everyone's familiar with Unfaithful, the movie with Diane Lane, with the same director as this movie, oddly enough.
Yeah.
But there's a whole scene where the woman is the cheater.
Yeah.
She's a whole scene on a train car where she's, like, laughing and then crying and then, like, thinking about it and feeling bad and feeling good. Because it's all that confliction of, like, I did something that I crossed a line I never thought I'd cross.
Yeah.
And even leading up to that point, she's very, like, will I, won't I, dot, dot, dot.
Yeah.
Whereas he is just, like...
He's just here for it.
Like, he has, and even when she, like, the whole weekend his family's gone, he has no problem spending the whole weekend with her.
Right.
He has no problem.
When he was supposed to be with them, looking at the house.
He has no problem just as soon as his wife is gone. I mean, like, he literally put her in the car and then, like, what? Like, left and went to have dinner with her, like, or whatever. And it's just, like, there is no... He is no... So to me, what that shows to me is that this is a behavior that he has acted on more than one time. This is not a guy who had a one, one time relationship.
He got caught up in something.
He got caught up in something with Glenn Close. And I mean, this, it seems like someone who is always out to serve themselves.
Well, yeah, also, no, this did not at all seem like this was like the first time.
I would
agree with that.
Yeah, he didn't act guilty
at
all.
He was too comfortable with it.
He felt, comfortable. Yeah, exactly. Like, he fell into it with Glenn Close so easily, like going out to the park and holding hands and like rolling around in a public space with his dog, calling her honey. Like, it was like a perfect recipe for a disaster because he has no boundaries with her and she has she can't read boundaries.
Yeah.
And so he, without really realizing it, was very much leading her on.
Absolutely leading her on. And, like, he's showing her that he has no concern for his wife. He has no concern for his family. He's negotiating this sexual relationship with her at like, a business dinner. Like, are you discreet? I'm discreet. I'm very discreet. Like,
well, also,
we're
going
to bang tonight.
Yeah.
And we're not going to talk about it ever again. And that is the assumption. And that's going to be great for me.
Well, regardless of whether or not she's truly pregnant, jury's out.
She's not.
He obviously did not use protection with
False.
Her. They did not talk about protection before
no.
they had sex. So no. he is endangering his health, her health and his wife's health, because I'm sure he's not using a condom when he's having sex with his wife. And so that in itself is a real indicator of narcissism, lack of consequences, impulsivity, and just not giving a shit.
Well, yeah, and to piggyback on that, he assumed that she would take that responsibility because he asked her flat out, what, you're not on anything? Like, hold on, no. Like, hold on.
He answered that. After.
After. Way after. Well, after.
Well, when she gets pregnant.
Right.
Like, wait, you weren't on anything? You weren't taking care of it?
You aren't on anything? And then assuming she will have an abortion because that's what he wants. Like, that that made my skin crawl. Like,
I was like, she ain't getting no abortion.
Like, oh, maybe he's a Republican congressman here.
Ooh. Yeah, right?
But, like, he just... I mean, so what we kind of touched upon before we started recording is the difference between being a narcissistic person as just, like, an adjective.
Right.
And then having narcissistic personality disorder.
Yeah.
And... I mean, the traits of narcissism personality disorder are, like, having a grandiose sense of self, which he kind of does have with I have a lot of pull around here, but also that could just be him being, like, a cocky douche.
Right, I didn't read that as, like, disorder. I know you guys interpreted it that way. I didn't see it that way. Well, that could just be a matter of perception. I thought he was, like, just being, like joking and, like, trying to be charming and, like, I have a lot of pull in this restaurant. But, you know,
which, I mean, it could be.
Yeah, it could have been either one.
And then, I mean, because here's the thing. A lot of the symptoms of the criteria of narcissistic personality disorder, he either doesn't seem to quite fit or it's like a less, it's not an intense version of. Like, we're, like really likes excessive admiration. I think he really liked her attention. But it didn't seem like he was someone who was, like, going on and on at work or, like, needed to be really powerful at work. Like, he didn't seem like he was delusional in his sense of who he was.
Right.
He's just kind of like an asshole.
Right. He's not Ron Burgundy where he collapses.
And there's, like, a sense of entitlement to, like, what he wants sexually. Like, there's a lack of empathy, which is another criteria. Like, not really caring about other people. Not seeming to care about how it would make his wife feel if he had an affair, his family in general. Like, even after she says she's pregnant, he does not seem that shook up.
He doesn't seem to express any guilt or shame.
None. Yeah. No, he does not.
I mean, he is
In any parts of this relationship. Or even in the idea... The only thing that I did notice, which I think is played a lot like this in movies, where after he sleeps with her and then his wife comes home... After that, and then he sees her, then he's, like, very sweet to her after he kind of had this weird interaction with Glenn Close's character, and he comes home, and he's very loving to her, and it's just, like, you can't just come... It's like he's trying to play off... Maybe he did feel some guilt and shame and is trying to be nicer to his wife.
Like, he's trying to prove himself, like, I'm a good husband,
I'm a nice guy, like, I'm fine. But, so I just don't know... I mean, that's the only, and that is the only time that happens. But again, whether or not that's out of guilt or shame, I don't know. But he certainly doesn't seem to have any, which again, just kind of leads me to an idea that there's something else going on with him that he would first, maybe he is just a prick, I don't know. But like that he continues, it seems like he has more than one of these relationships, more of one of these times where he's acting this way.
Well, you had pointed out off mic that you were talking about noticing that he... was super quick and, like, knew what to do. He showed no panic at all, like, jumping into the bed and...
proving that he had slept in it.
Right, and, like, the food his wife made for him and, like, feeding it to the dog, who he had neglected for a whole night. He left the dog alone. That pissed me off because, like, my dog would have, like... I'm sorry.
We said that we weren't going to talk about the dog.
We did.
We have to talk about the dog. Sorry.
Listen, he's
he
not
abandoned
a nice...
the dog. It proves the point that he was narcissistic.
He took the dog to the park with Glenn Close.
The day after, like, dogs have to shit like 3 times a day at least.
My problem.
Like,
here's
like,
my problem.
He left that dog home so we could go bang her, and he left that dog like, well, you can shit on the floor, I guess. It's
I don't
cool.
want to fight with you on air, but. He leads a woman down a path of self-destruction who ends up dying. So I'm not really worried about the fact that the dog might have been uncomfortable for like a day or two. But here's the thing.
Agreed.
Also, you shouldn't be surprised because he clearly doesn't think about anybody but himself.
That's what I mean. I don't mean like the dog should trump. Like, are we going to start valuing life? Like, okay, so where do we put the rabbit that gets boiled and maybe murdered with a knife? I don't know.
I think the dog squished it.
Oh,
and then she put it in there.
Maybe. Like,
but I think...
It was violent, whatever
it was. Bad.
But I do think... What Hannah said is true. Like, he makes sure that when he goes home, he knows exactly how to rearrange the house so that it looks like he's been there all weekend.
So it makes me think about... So I've worked with people who have had affairs, right? I'm a marriage and family couple therapist. And so the panic and the guilt and the shame that I often see in somebody who's engaging in that kind of activity, he doesn't have any of those things.
Like, even
no.
when
he seems very sure of himself. There's just no fucking hesitation with this guy. Like, right. he comes in, he rolls around, he kind of makes it look like I think he rubs something on himself so he doesn't smell as clean or something. I don't know. Like, he does. The fact that he comes home and knows exactly what to do is like, fuck, how many fucking times has this guy done this?
Right.
Well, you know, well, it's because he doesn't do it in a state of panic. Like, oh shit, like, I gotta make this up. Exactly. He does it like he's doing the chores.
Right. Right. And, like, I've had guys in my office who have, and women, too, for that matter.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about guys, because we're talking about Dan. Like, I've had a few guys in my office before who have had affairs and were there because they were trying to repair themselves and figure out what went wrong and what happened.
Right.
What did I do? What's missing from my life that this happened?
Right. That I got to a place where this was the only way that I could, felt like I could be comfortable.
Right. That this was a decision that I could make. Yeah. Like, this is not who I think about. There's remorse and guilt and shame and embarrassment and frustration, and it doesn't always come after they get caught, like movies like to portray. Like with this guy Dan in the movie, that's the case for sure. Had he not got caught, this wouldn't have been an issue.
He was
for him.
Only sweating it when she was amping it up, and he was like, I might have to tell her before it gets told.
Correct. But I've had plenty of guys in my office who have told their partner or were going to or whatever, but like, they display completely different behaviors, and their description of how the emotional turmoil they went through was not at all represented by Michael Douglas's character in this movie at all.
It's like business as usual.
Right.
I just do whatever the fuck I want. Whatever the fuck I want.
It's like a contract killer, like dealing with a body. Like,
yeah.
I know. Yeah. We'll get the lie and we'll pour it on it and put it in a hole and we'll be fine.
Ugh. And then with Glenn Close, with Alex, after they have several bad exchanges, and she comes to his work to confront him, and she's acting really calm, which is scary.
Yeah.
But he, like, hugs her. He tells her she looks great. Like, he's also not putting up boundaries consistently in the movie.
No, he isn't.
Like, I think he thinks he can still get ahead in this relationship. Like, he can still manipulate her and be on top and, like, keep it everything under control, which is a very... more of the adjective narcissistic than of diagnosis narcissistic.
Absolutely.
Where you just think that you have your handle on everything and that like you can control the whole situation if you just say the right thing. And also shows that he doesn't really respect women. Well, obviously, because of what he's doing.
Yeah.
But the fact that he thinks he can so easily figure her out, and why Alex really throws him for a loop is because she's not figure outable in that way.
No.
No.
He'll take it.
It's not a rational path that we go along. Like, this is like,
because he might have done this before with other women, and it worked out because he was so charming and whatever.
Or you shut him out, and they're like, they got it. They're like, okay, well, you know, this was what it was, and...
Well, just in the way that when me and Brittany were watching it, we could pick out the things that were going to happen next, because it's so clear that she is not... Alex did not feel comfortable, and she's going to keep trying to get what she needs to get. And him not being able to realize that, or because he's too busy covering up his own ass and too busy getting, again, just getting his needs met however he has to.
Even him, like, and also what we said earlier, like, he just doesn't know what he's dealing with. Like, the fact that after she slits her wrist, he stays and takes care of her and gives her what he wants. Like, in many stages of this movie, he gives her what she wants.
Every stage until he, like, realizes that she needs help, and then he's like, you need to go to a doctor, you need to get help, you need to go to the hospital.
But then he doesn't do anything to follow up.
But also, he does a lot of stupid stuff.
Oh, tons of stuff.
That could get him in trouble.
Stuff.
Like, she could end
up... cheating on his wife.
What I'm surprised she didn't do, which I think would not be out of the ordinary, because she never really thinks of him as, like, a demon, is go to the cops against him, because he chokes her, he puts his hands on her multiple times.
While she's pregnant.
And I'm surprised she didn't go to the... Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if, in that situation, she would have gone to the cops and been like, he abuses me. Just to fuck up his life, blow up his world, you know, screw up with his wife, maybe ruin his job, you know.
Hell hath no fury.
Yeah. And so, because it is one of those things where he probably up till now has been able to get a handle on situations with women. And now he's in a situation where messing with someone who's mentally ill.
Well, I would imagine... This is just me. that in most of his experiences, the woman doesn't seek him out. Like, he left no way for her to contact him except for the fact that he fucks somebody that he works with like a fucking idiot. But, like, besides that, like, he probably just sleeps with...
He didn't leave his number or anything.
Right. So he probably, usually, they don't have a way to get in contact with him.
And it is the
80s.
So right. She can't Google media him or Google him and find him.
Yeah.
So it probably was really easy. I don't even think they worked the same building. They just worked for the same company.
Yeah, because she had
to... I think her company hired his to do some litigation for him.
So she could have easily tracked him down via work, and which she kind of does and lie.
Well, the Rolodex, which is, like, weird to see.
Oh, my God. It's awesome. Right? But he definitely tries to, like dash and run. And I guess you could argue that he does a little gaslighting with her when she is like, you're just going to leave. And he's like, this is just sex. Like, I get where he's coming from. But also, it's him wanting this to stay on his terms and then treating her like she's crazy for thinking of it as anything else. Even though he did share the story about Madame Butterfly, he does have kind of an intimate dinner with her at her place.
Yeah.
Like, if it was just going to be sex, then you wouldn't...
Then what are you doing here the second day?
He does such a bad job having consistent, concrete boundaries with her.
Right, which, you know, tells me with him that he's probably dealing with some of the... loneliness and like the change in status in a relationship that can come when a child is born, and where like there starts to be like you start playing a different role with each other.
I did write,
but this child is also well past the age when that's usually a difficulty. Like, usually that's in the first few months when like the wife just had a baby and she is not physically ready to have any sort of relationships with you, and that can be hard on couples. Like, I've had.
Yeah.
Like, couples, like, who come in and, like, they've talked about that, or guys who've come and talked about, you know, we had a baby recently and I haven't felt very wanted by my wife. Like, she hasn't wanted to touch me or anything.
Yeah, because the kid does sleep in their bed.
Right.
The movie.
Right. At the beginning of the movie, like, you see the wife looks super hot. Like, she's, like, taken off her, like, shoulder pad or her, like, her jacket, shoulder pad jacket.
In the 80s, everyone had to take off their shoulder pads before bed.
Right.
And lose half of
in order
body
to sleep,
volume.
Otherwise.
Right, it's like I have like this image of like Legion of Doom, like shoulder pads with big spikes sticking out. Right. Yeah.
but I get what you're saying. It set it up for like, we're going to have some sexual, intimate times, the two of us, and then he comes back in and the kid's in there.
Right, and the kid's in the bed, and it's like, and then he's like kind of neglected and ignored. Like, they kind of glossed it over, but like, that stuff does happen. It's something that probably leads people to Hannah's office quite often. It's like, there's some kind of change in the relationship that results in a change in the intimacy level between the couple, but maybe they didn't negotiate it well, or maybe he's been neglecting her, and because he's been working or whatever, their relationship is damaged in some way. But if we're talking about like why he might act like this, that's my theory as to why he would be like, okay, well, I'm not getting any attention at home, or I don't feel like I'm like a sexual being anymore, and this woman is showing me that like that affection that I don't feel like I'm getting, and that's... But none of that excuses his behavior,
well,
like, at all.
I guess here's, as our resident man, my question to you is, what I noticed more, and I'm not a man, obviously, and I'm also not, like, a man in his, like, 40s. I know you're not also not a man in your
40s. I am
but
not.
You are the only man we got here. But
I guess I'll have to do.
But it seemed like what I noticed was... His wife and daughter go to the country, and it's almost like a very distinct split between identities. Like, they're going off to do the boring, like, living in a, you know, a two-garage house with a white picket fence, and, like, growing up and moving out of the city and being very settled down and boring, you know, blah, 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 you know, in his mind. And then there's
Stop talking about my future, Brittany.
And then there is, well, this is why I'm asking. And then there is, like, the exciting city life. And so as soon as his wife's out of town with his kid buying their, you know... settled home, he's like going out clubbing with her, he's having wild sex, he's getting BJs in elevators, like, and it definitely seemed like he was enjoying being back in the identity of someone before they would get married.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if that's part of it too, which is entirely his issue, regardless of his wife, but of, I think when people have that identity crisis of, I miss the nostalgic carefreeness of when I was not attached, when I could do whatever the fuck I wanted, when I could drink. And I mean, and the thing is, once you actually go through that stuff, you realize, like, well, that's neither here. I mean, they're apples and oranges.
It
like,
could be that. What I would tell you, though, is it's more often than not, it's not the I can do whatever I want. For some guys, it is. Like, that's not wrong. But for more of the guys I see, like, more of, like, the human beings who are, like, telling you, you know, going to a safe place, like, what I'm seeing is that it's the feeling not wanted or not as sexually attractive to someone anymore, where you start getting a little bit older or your life changes and not feeling like someone's paying the same amount of attention to you or your needs aren't being met, and like to have someone do that for him and like show him like that level of interest. Granted, this shit is batshit crazy. Like, makes me wonder maybe like what porn was like in the 80s, because like what like the weird fantasy sex they might have been showing people then. I don't know.
We'd have to like find a, you know, a porn mag in the woods with your friends of 14, and that's the porn they had in the 80s, or a VHS tape.
Right, but like whatever was like, I don't know, but like the thing that you see is that these guys feel like kind of like abandoned by their wife, and then if someone shows them that attention, they're like, oh wait, hold on though, like I'm maybe I am still attracted to someone, could still want me, and it triggers like a different level of feelings for them. And like, is that his issue? Absolutely, because he didn't talk, we can assume, with his wife about it and like deal with it and like do something like go see a therapist like Hannah, who might know exactly how to work with that with you.
Well, I think it's probably, I'm making big assumptions, but it's probably one of those things where it's like, well, this is what life's like when you're married. And so if I want to get that excitement back or that feeling of like sexual attention, I have to seek it outside my marriage. Because my marriage is a place of full of dead people.
You know, that happens. That does happen. And like, that's where it becomes like the responsibility of both partners to meet in the middle and to use a couples therapy or turn towards each other's efforts to like repair that, mend.
But I would say where why it doesn't feel authentic in this movie is that Dan just feels like a straight up douche. Like, he is definitely like a narcissistic, like powerhouse lawyer type, where he probably just kind of does whatever he wants. Who knows what he was like when he was in his 20s? Probably a nightmare.
Cocaine.
100%.
Yeah. But cocaine, exactly.
So I think what you're saying, Ben, is like in more of like an actual real world scenario, that would be stuff coming up. In this movie, which is a parody of both of these people.
Correct.
It's more just like two horrible people finding each other and exploding their problems onto each other.
Right.
Yeah. So I mean, it would make sense to me in some ways that there was, because of how things change when you have a child and how the focus can change in the relationship and how the sexuality can change, because sometimes for the woman it can be very hard or just a tricky situation. It can take a little bit longer than anybody hoped. So, I mean, maybe there is a chance that, I mean, this kid is 6 years old.
Where it started?
Yeah, like this kid is 6 years old. They were together for 3 years, married for 3 years because they have a 9-year anniversary in the movie. Married for 3 years before they had their child together. So then that's 6 years. So there is a chance that that is something that either maybe he developed, maybe even while she was pregnant. Also, pregnancy can be very hard and can make the woman have different feelings about sexuality as well. So, I mean, there's a potential for that. I do think that that is more likely in the humans that we see who come into our office. Dan, in the movie, he's the worst.
Is that your professional opinion, yeah, Hannah?
That's my professional.
But I also feel like
he plays the version of somebody who just, of a man who just doesn't care about anything. And I think it's hard to, I'm sure there's a lot of different ways where he got, like, if we look at him as a character who ends up in this place who has some shame and remorse and some guilt, that they would come in, and what that would look like is more of, I think, what you're talking about. And that there's almost always a chance that our experiences that we have in our families and in other relationships have an impact on how we end up, you know, how we are able to maintain a long-term relationship, like a marriage with somebody.
Well, I mean, the common theme I feel like we bring up in this show was, what were their parents like? Because it's like, I wonder what Michael Douglas's dad was like. Not Douglas, but Dan's dad.
Right. And how much watching our parents in their marriage can have an effect on how we think marriages should, what we think they should be like, how we think they should go. And again, not like all bad or all good, but just like that is what we're used to seeing. And how do we then either pick out the good things that we want and roll with it, or do we end up kind of back in the situation where intimacy is not, you know, there isn't enough of it, or there isn't enough sex, or there isn't whatever. There's no time, no focus on the couple, which happens a lot after, can happen often after people have children.
But also, it's one of those things, too, where I wonder if his dad had a lot of affairs, and it was just kind of understood that the dudes play around, and the wife just stays home and ignores it and takes care of the kids.
Because or if that's the culture to his job.
Yeah,
right. True. I mean, that could be the culture. I mean, in all honesty. Because
look at Mad Men. Mad Men shows that.
Like, yeah. Well, also, his friend didn't seem like...
All the men just did whatever they wanted.
I mean, this is 20 years later than that, but yeah, it shows...
I mean, his friend did not seem that floored. He was more floored when they talk in the movie and he, like, asks for his legal advice because she's going next level.
Right. Yeah.
His friend doesn't seem floored by the fact that he had an affair. It's more that,
right,
wow, it's really gone. It's really escalated.
Yeah.
Is what he seems more blown away by.
Oh, and she's pregnant.
Yeah, and that's bad news bears. And so it definitely seems like his friend is kind of sleazy in a very similar way. I mean, and it's like New York in the 80s and lawyers and like, yeah, ha, ha.
Well, like one of those things, too, where like, you know, how in Anchorman, how you find the people that you need to maintain your ideas and thoughts about yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, he's friends with sleazy dudes because he's a sleazy dude.
Yep, yeah. Right. All right, so if we were to do treatment with these people, what would we be wanting to do?
Well, I was trying to think about, because I'm the, you know, kid therapist, and I was trying to think about for Alex, poor little Alex, because her dad does die in front of her.
Yeah.
That is proven to be true in the movie.
Right, when she's 7. But,
like we said before, we have no idea who she was before her relationship with Dan, besides this dad thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what, like, if she had other caregivers after her dad died, like... Because that'd be one of those things where she would hopefully go to therapy right after that, and then we'd work a lot on building up her foundation and sense of safety and sense of self after losing a caregiver.
Yes.
Which is a lot of who can you depend on, mm-hmm. who can you trust. You'd involve that other caregiver probably in therapy to be there and be present, maybe in sessions, certain sessions, and kind of just say, like, this is who I'll be for you, learning how to communicate, teaching the parent or the caregiver, whoever that would be, how to show love and support to this child. Like, how can you be there for them and be a therapeutic support for them when they're at home going through this grief? So it would be a lot of trying to make sure that that relationship is strong so that the child does not have attachment issues and fear of loss that will develop into these behaviors that Alex presents later on, which is erratic, deep, deep, deep fear of being alone. And not really knowing how to create intimacy because you don't really have good role models or good relationships showing you. Because we don't know what her mom was like. We don't know how her mom reacted to the dad's death. We don't know who she went to live with after her dad died, or if she stayed with her mom, or if her mom started dating a bunch of dudes.
And, if it was a grandmother, and,
I showed a lot of crazy relationships after that.
Yeah.
And so it's really hard. And I don't even know how you would go about counseling the daughter in this movie. Because she's had a lot of traumas. She's had... I don't know where she is in the house when all the shooting happens. Where is she in the house when the mom guns down Alex?
Where's the dog? Sorry.
Jeez Louise. You well, and that dog. That dog's happy to live through
my
this
dog,
movie.
If someone came in a house like that, my dog would... I mean, there's no way someone gets in your house with the dog there. But, yeah, I don't know what's going on with this child. Like, she's... Where she is in this picture, like, is she sleeping? Like, hopefully she's not in the next room.
Is she upstairs?
I think that she is... She asleep? Sleeping. I think it's nighttime.
Yeah, it's for sure nighttime.
So I guess, I mean, also we don't know. I don't know. I feel like what's hard about
the bathroom is in relation to the rest of the house.
I feel like
what's hard about the daughter could be on the first level or something.
And how did this child explain being out at the amusement park with this woman?
I guess it would, because here's the thing. 6 is a tricky age in that kids can be really resilient at that age. And who knows what she's really absorbing and reacting to trauma-wise. I feel like the bunny thing.
I say the bunny, I feel like, is probably the most traumatic.
She screams, and hopefully she didn't see it. Like, you know what I mean? And hopefully the parents handled that. But
She just assumes, like, the bunny got away.
It'd probably be one of those things where she'd come in my office and I would just, instead of leading her and being like, how do you feel about your parents and the death in your house? I would just see what she brought up, because I also don't want to, like, put any ideas in her head.
No.
Or make her feel like she has to be upset about something. So I think we do that sometimes to kids because we want to make sure we're asking the right questions or that we're being supportive, or we're like, how do you feel about, you know, your grandpa dying? But it's like, then the kid will start sometimes be like, should I be more sad about grandpa dying?
Yeah, I feel like I should be sad.
And so then they start making, like, they start being inauthentic.
Making connections.
And they start acting like, well, maybe I should be upset, and why am I not upset? You know, and that can cause anxiety. Whereas if you kind of just are like, If that kid came in my office, I would just be like, so what's going on? What's happened lately in your life? And just let her talk. And whatever she brought up, we would just talk about. It'd probably be a lot of, like, play, just, like, playing dolls because she's little. And maybe I would have her do, like, a dollhouse situation and see what she has picked up with her parents. Because what you do then is you kind of have a family. And then you see how the kid acts out the family. Like, where do the parents sleep? And how do the parents treat each other? And where are they physically in the house? And where is she in the house, her doll baby, when her the parent dolls are in the house? And so, or have them draw pictures of their family. And that can give you a lot of information about her perception of the family. Because in her mind, because her dad is such a charming, manipulative douchebag, she might not think anything's wrong.
Yeah.
No, well, daddy brought her a bunny.
Well, he bought her a bunny, but also her mom's pretty chill, and her dad, like, no one is, like, acting, like, they don't fight, like, they don't have a big explosive, besides when he told the wife that he was cheating, like, there isn't a lot of big explosive, it's a pretty stable household for how chaotic everything is around.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So she from also might be, quote-unquote, fine. Like, yeah. She might be sad about the bunny, and you might have to talk about grief with a pet dying and death in general, and, like, do a little psychoeducation and a little help with that, and kind of teach, make sure the parents are having good boundaries with her about whatever fallout they're going through with all this. Because I'm sure mom's going to go through it.
Well, I mean,
after
this,
killing someone.
Mom's going to go through it. This is also going to be all over the news.
I was going to say, I think that
they probably lose his job. Like, yeah.
Well, there might also be an aspect of the public knowing more than you do. So then doing some stuff about what is it like at school, or how are you, like, kind of,
because also here's
like
the thing,
does it feel different? Do you feel like people are quiet around you? Like, just trying to see what the kid's experience is like, because there's a chance that something like this happens,
or her,
you won't be able to
of...
get away from it, and it will be, she'll be exposed to it even if the parents are pretty successful in shielding her from it,
right? Like, your mom killed somebody in your house. Like, who's gonna let their child go and do a sleepover at her house now?
That's true.
Nobody.
But also too, like,
nobody.
What was, yeah, and then everyone at school acting weird because she got kidnapped from school,
right? You know, I mean, like, there's so, like, many. I feel like it might be more of her experience of what it's like to have all these things happen around you that you don't really understand, and getting information that maybe you shouldn't be getting, and how does she
maybe helping her
internalize? Yeah, how would she internalize all that? Because I feel like there would be a lot of fallout public-wise.
So there probably would be a kid that I would see maybe every other week, depending on.
Yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily have to see her every week unless she's really, like, acting out or demonstrating a lot of emotional strife about what's happened.
Yeah.
But maybe just someone I would check in with every other week and see, like, how, what are they, like, what's on their mind? You know, kind of just being an unbiased third party that they can, that feels out the situation for them and with them.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that. But you would want to be monitoring and mindful, and of course you would be, like, of the situation. And you'd be like, we need to see, you know, like, and assess her, like, how, what does she know? I suspect some of this stuff may hit her later.
I think when she's
more as
a teenager,
right.
And gets, and also all, and even what's 80 something, so she's around our age in terms of now.
Yeah, yeah.
And so once the internet hits and she, like, looks into her family, like, it's one of those things where it'd be interesting what she discovers as she gets older, and she might have to go to therapy several times over her life just to process new revelations.
Right.
Yeah.
And then God, you know, and it's just, I mean, it's all very what-if territory, but also, like,
it
what's
is,
the fallout of her parents' relationship, and...
Yeah.
And I also think what's hard about this movie in general is that every character in this movie outside of Dan is just kind of one-dimensional into... You only know so much about them as they relate to Dan. Like,
right.
We don't know anything about his wife.
Nothing.
She's very cool and calm, and, like, she's, like, a cool girl. Like, she doesn't seem rattled by anything. And even at the end, after she shoots someone because her husband is a dick and brought that into their lives, he hugs her and she's like, yeah, okay, and hugs him. And I was like, I don't think that she should have been like, I'm calling my lawyer because it, like, just happened. But I wouldn't want to touch him. I would be like, you need to be away from me. Like, because I would be traumatized. I would be so angry. I would just be like a wreck. But I don't think I'd want comfort from him because he put me in this situation. I know that's individual, but...
That's not unreasonable. Like, she kicks him out at one point.
Yeah.
Okay, so we kind of covered the kiddo. What if we were to see Alex? I mean, like, for me, the first step for Alex needs to be hospitalized. Period.
100%.
Like,
well, yeah, she's suicidal.
She's
a harm to herself and others, and inability to care for herself. She's like all three.
Yeah. Right. Right. She's demonstrated intent, plans, means. Like, she's got a knife. She's tried to stab two people. She's demonstrated child endangerment. Like, she needs to be in a hospital.
Arrested. And then probably put in jail.
She probably would have gotten arrested when she kidnapped a little girl.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
From school. She would have been arrested.
Let's say,
the police also should have been outside their house.
Yeah.
But let's
and
say
they should not have been in their house.
She slit her wrists, and he called and hospitalized her at that point. So before it
so
went
she's in the hospital.
All the way to criminal activity. Like, let's say if he had actually, been a human being and called the
followed
hospital.
Followed through.
Called an ambulance, and then she went to the hospital. So she definitely would have to be hospitalized for a bit.
Oh, yeah. For sure. I mean, I think she would need to go through the full process. And when we say that, I mean that she would need to go through inpatient, where they get her stabilized on, for borderline, they're probably going to give mood stabilizers to help deal with the impulsivity and the mood fluctuations. Because that's where this gets dangerous, is when she's demonstrating those mood fluctuations, where they would also be simultaneously doing borderline, or not borderline, sorry, Did my words fail me today?
DBT?
Yes, they'd be doing dialectical behavior therapy with her. Thank you. Mm-hmm. They'd be doing DBT with her, and we would be seeing her need to go to groups and individual and
It'd
deal
be
with psychiatrists.
Highly, highly structured.
Very structured, and then she would be moving through the process to where she would be needing to go to partial hospital, probably.
Mm-hmm. Which is like it's like a day program for therapy. You go like 8 to noon or 8 to 3.
Right. And then you're having more intensive groups. And then she would probably need to go through PHP, which is, 3 days a week of the treatment where you still go home, but you spend most of your day in treatment. And then from there, she would need individual and group therapy, both.
She probably would be someone who probably could go to therapy twice a week, and just as maintenance, like regularly go to therapy twice a week. And we talk about dialectical behavioral therapy. It's a really long, complicated thing. Well, I mean, it's a really in-depth technique.
It's a really in-depth
but technique, a lot of, when you do DBT, it's highly structured. You have to be a trained DBT therapist to do it because you are available to your clients all the time. So, which is good for someone like her who might be highly triggered, and she can call a therapist at any time of day and they can talk to her about what's going on and assess her. And work her through stuff as she's learning how to deal with situations and emotional elevation and interpersonal relationships. And it involves a lot of group, a lot of like workshop kind of things where you learn a lot of concrete skills. You have workbooks, you do homework. It is like a class. It's like going to school learning like learning therapy techniques to help you calm down, to help you assess situations appropriately, like look at a situation that you normally would. Let's say when he tries to leave, in that scene where he tries to leave and she's like, "You think I'm just some whore," and she screams at him. In that situation, what would be expected of her is to learn how to take deep breaths, calm yourself down, then actually look at the situation, what's actually going on. Are you looking at the situation appropriately? Are you escalating it in your head? Making something it's not, and then what would be the appropriate response? But it's very mechanical like that, so it is like learning a whole nother skill set that you have to practice, process, and learn how to do as if you were learning like coding.
Absolutely. And like it operates almost like breaking down their current behavior. It's like it almost operates the same way, like on the same concepts that military training operates on. Like, let's break down the things that you've been doing that don't fit into this new life that we're going to build for you and teach you new ways to think. We're going to use acronyms. We're going to teach you new behaviors, new ways to adapt. And then we're going to give you lots of support and reinforcement to do it through or to move you through this process. And we're going to do that by individual therapy, by group therapy, and by having a therapist who's available to you 24/7 to answer phone calls and to deal with crisis moments to help coach you through them.
Mm-hmm, for sure. So it's intensive, but it's specially designed for people who have borderline personality disorder. That's why it was created, and that's the most effective, scientifically proven, evidence-based practice for borderline personality disorder.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So what do we want to talk about as far as the couples? Because if they're Dan and his wife are probably going to need some help.
Do we even know her name?
No, I don't remember. I think Ruda. I wrote it down. I think I wrote it down, maybe.
Who cares?
I don't think it matters. So I think if they come in, so let's just say the whole shooting Glenn Close's character doesn't happen, because that would be, I feel like
that's a bridge too far for a couple.
I feel like if they come in, that it would be like, okay, I would do their assessment, and then I would have them see individual therapists if she had murdered the ex.
She needs to deal with that trauma.
She needs to deal with trauma, because it's otherwise it's just going to be, the sessions will be very traumatic. It'll be very hard to manage, very hard to, what's hard about when couples come in crisis every session is that it can be really hard to help them learn the skills that they need to be able to manage outside of the therapy office. Mm-hmm. So I would be worried that if they came in initially, that there's a chance that it's just going to be a crisis every session, and trying to not have that happen, because it's not the best way to help.
It's not their marriage right now.
Right. Exactly. So when people come in for couples therapy, especially when dealing with infidelity, kind of getting in a, being able to create a healing space with them is the most important thing that I can do. And if we have somebody, two people who are reacting to the traumas that they've experienced, it would be really hard to keep that healing space open and to be able to focus on their marriage. So I think that it would be, clearly, I think that they would need it, because there's clearly some intimacy missing there, whether it has to do with the child or whether it has to do with past traumas for both of them. I'm not really sure. But I would definitely want to work with them on creating emotional intimacy, and as well as taking a look at their sex life and what that's like, and if the desire is there, and kind of helping them figure out how to reconnect in that way. I think it would also be, you know, the beginning of it would be helping them build trust and just really process what happened. Yep. And all the thoughts and feelings around the affair, and, you know, and also really making sure that they both want to focus on the relationship. Because the other thing that can happen sometimes is people come in and one person is already out of the marriage. And it can be, it would be really, it might even be really hard to do with Dan and his wife. Because he might be able to come in and really profess this love that he has for his wife, but also doesn't want to do the work. And in that case, that can be really hard as a couple's therapist to be like, well, if you guys aren't willing to do any of the work outside of this room, it's really hard for me to help you make any changes in your relationship.
Right.
Because coming someplace once a week for a couple for an hour is not going to be able to make as big of a change as all the homework and that things that I'm asking you to do afterwards.
Yeah. Because, I mean, especially if he is, let's, on the hypothesis that he's a serial cheater and it's worked out for him up to this point.
Yeah.
Is he motivated to change if this life is working
exactly
for him?
Like,
well, I didn't get that he was even that invested in his wife, like his relationship with,
right,
her. He's invested in his relationship with his daughter, but not so much with his wife.
So what I think would be, so what I think would is more likely to happen is, in this situation, they come in like 5 years before that. They come in when that little girl's one.
Yeah.
And that's when I see that couple. And that's when we talk about the ways that the relationship has changed since they had a child. And how is that, you know, how can we, what is a healthy way to shift you both back towards your relationship? And how do we do that? Do they come in after this happens with Glenn Close? I don't think so.
I mean, after all of this happens, like, it's just going to be
really
a
good,
whole nother
there's a really
level
of good
issue.
Chance that they, that she's going to say, get the fuck out of my life because you endangered my daughter's life, and I'm not interested in any situation that you're going to put me in again where that is a possibility.
I mean, and I think that's probably the most likely outcome here, because when you talk about, like, some of the things that really drive trauma home is when you have your safety taken away from you, and you don't feel safer anywhere than you do at home.
Yeah.
And this was a violation of marriage, of physical safety, of emotional safety, of someone's home. Like, he didn't sleep with her in the home, and that's usually another, like, big problem.
But would she
problem.
Believe that he didn't?
I cannot see a single reason why she would believe that.
Like,
well, because she knows where they lived. You know, she knew where both their houses were.
Exactly.
And I'd be like, how did she know where we lived? Like, and then also, like,
she
I
came
said before,
well, and she came into the house and acted like she was going to buy it. I mean, like, there's so many different things that have happened.
Right. She made that. She could have murdered his wife at any of those points.
Because the big question, because I'm not a couples therapist, but I've dabbled in couples therapy. Because the big question sometimes after this kind of situation is, do you think you can trust your partner again? And do they deserve your trust again?
Yeah.
Because I mean, you don't have to do the work if they have broken too much trust within you. Like, you don't, you know, I mean, I get wanting to stay in a relationship, but...
Absolutely.
You don't necessarily, like... Do they deserve the work to build trust back within them?
Exactly.
Right. And that so it's really an individual decision, you know?
Yeah. And so, and that's where, so again, which I think I've talked about before, when I see couples, the first thing I do is I see them together and then I see them individually and really try to check in because again, it has to really, they have to really want to do work. I mean, couples therapy takes time. I think the other thing that, since I'm just talking about marriage, family therapy in general, the other thing that I think that people don't quite understand is I hear a lot, well, I tried couples therapy and it didn't work. Or I went, and I think the other thing that can happen in couples therapy is that sometimes people want it to be this magical fix. You're going to be together for 10 years, you're going to come and see this therapist at the worst point in your marriage, and I'm going to be able to do something magical that's going to take all of the resentment and hurt and pain away. And that's not always the case. It's a lot of work, and sometimes I think people don't have great experiences because they aren't willing to do the work. And that's the other part. As a couples therapist, it relies a lot more on how much motivation the couple has in front of you to make changes in their relationship. And that part of doing that versus the individual that I do doesn't quite translate in the same way.
No, I mean, you'd have to really figure out if they're invested in this, if they're ready.
And he hasn't shown a lot of traits in this movie to prove that he's invested.
No.
Right. So I mean,
shown it the other way. Actually.
So I feel like if they came in, it might be a couple where they come on, I do the individual assessment, and then I have to say, I'm not really sure if I can help you at this time. I think I can find you two individual therapists that might be helpful. But I don't know if at this time this would be the best option for you.
Right. Yeah. And something I think that needs to be stated is that something people don't always realize about marriage and family therapy is that sometimes part of it is negotiating your way through a divorce.
Yeah.
Like, that's not always the ideal outcome, but sometimes it's the right one.
Sometimes it's helping people see their different reasons why sometimes we're better off not in that relationship anymore.
And how sometimes, if you're staying together for your kids, sometimes what you're really modeling for your kids is how to conflict resolution, you know, civil relationships, you know, finding respect for yourselves, you know, respect in relationships, you know, modeling healthy relationships if you're not in one currently.
Yeah, exactly.
Just because mommy and dad are together doesn't mean that that's a good modeling relationship
no.
for the kids.
And just knowing that it's just, you know, couples therapy is just hard. It's hard work. Mm-hmm. And both people have to be invested in it for it to really work well. And that people can and do come back from having infidelity.
Yeah. People can work through infidelity.
People can work through a lot of different things as long as they really are devoted to making a change and to really trying to build intimacy and trust within their relationship.
Yeah.
So final thoughts, y'all.
So my final thoughts are that this movie, I thought, displayed the mental illness well in some parts, and in other parts it vilified it, and I didn't like that. But overall, like, I thought... It's a great movie, and like, I have to quote like one of my coworkers who said like this movie was the greatest thing to ever happen to fidelity. Like, it's like
Glenn Close says she said a lot of people come up to her and like after the movie came out and thank her for saving their marriage. And I'm like, if you need a movie like this to help you through your marriage, dude,
right? Like the single greatest warning against infidelity, you know. But like, it's a great depiction of what the facial expressions and behavioral interactions might be like with someone.
Personal stuff.
Right. Yeah. The interpersonal like might be like with someone who has struggled with borderline personality disorder. What it doesn't do a good job of is showing how you should respond to that in a healthy way or what a likely outcome of that is, because they made it like a vilify. Like, if you have borderline, you're going to be like killing people's rabbits and trying to murder their wife to make them be with you. And that's ridiculous.
Well, the idea that it will go to that level. Like, it'll escalate until you have to literally kill them.
Yeah.
It mostly would probably be a lot of, like, stalkery stuff and, like, incessant stuff. And she might fuck up your life by being all over you, but she probably wouldn't kill you.
She'd probably tell your wife.
She'd probably just call your house and tell your wife.
It's probably going to happen.
I really like this movie. I did not think I would. But I liked it because it was so Lifetime-y and extra. And it was nice to see someone like Michael Douglas get his, even though he lived to see the end of it. And I was astounded by how, like you said, Ben, like how it kind of went like paint by numbers of borderline personality disorder. Where I was like, oh, now she's going to do this. And then she would do it. And I was like, now she's going to say she's pregnant. And then she said she was pregnant. And I was like, aha! Like,
knew it. Was,
this called movie that. Is very entertaining and like surprisingly accurate about borderline to an extent. Right. To an extent.
Absolutely. 100%.
But yeah. I enjoyed it. This movie made you mad.
This movie made me mad. Surprise, surprise. And, yeah, I was just really mad, and I'm still mad about it. And, and I don't think I'll ever watch it again.
Mad because men are not nice in this movie?
Mad because men aren't nice in this movie, and nobody is nice in this movie, and I don't like it. I don't like any...
A bunch of pricks out for themselves.
Yeah, a bunch of pricks out for themselves, and I, you know, I'm not interested in that world at all.
Mm-hmm. Well... You know, find us on Instagram at Popcorn Psychology. Find us at Twitter at Popcorn_Psych.
Yeah.
One?
Yeah.
Okay. And then please find us on iTunes, wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe, review, rate. We also have a Gmail, popcornpsychology@gmail.com, if you want to send us any feedback. And we will see you in 2 weeks.